As I've been looking at this subject for this morning, I guess I probably wrestled with this one more than any of the others. How does an Anabaptist think mathematically different than any other believer? How does he think scientifically different than any other believer? I don't really know. We could go into history. We might do a little bit and just see a few examples of people of Anabaptist faith and how they used math and science. But likely in these subject areas that we are looking at this morning, probably in this area our beliefs will harmonize or relate more closely to those that are being held by other evangelical Christians. The subject we looked at yesterday on social studies and the one on Bible study are probably the ones where we may have the greater differences, obvious differences, because of how we view God, Scripture, and God's plan and will for mankind. Somehow in math, in the science areas, we're a little bit more on the same page. And so, a lot of the things that I share this morning are not, I feel, so distinctly Anabaptist. They are Anabaptist, but they're also viewed and held likely by many, many others. I will admit right away, too, that math and science is not, how should I say, my area of greatest comfort and almost interest. I was terrible at math when I went to school. Detested this stuff. Never could figure out in third and fourth grade when you do long division that you have to multiply once in a while in there and then subtract. How that all could fit into division, I didn't know. And it was tough. Even into high school, math was something I did because I had to in order to get credit, not in order to learn something. But math became something I enjoyed doing as a teacher, because math makes sense. You can figure it out. Science, probably a little bit more interesting, because you see the work of God in so many, many interesting and varied ways. How does an Anabaptist think when it comes to the natural sciences, math and logic, and so on? I'd like to just point out a few characteristics this morning and then just see what are some applications that we can make and how we can teach these concepts and expand on them. I do believe that these sciences show the sovereignty and the character of God. His creative power, his power in ruling the universe, in taking care of situations, his power that he demonstrates in unusual things that happen in the earth, like thunderstorms, earthquakes, floods, and tsunamis, and all these other things that do happen. And they just show us the picture of God. I think it's important, because that's the only picture that even the heathen see. Scripture says that in Romans 1. And by all means, our students should be able to grasp that picture. But we need to lead them from that picture further on. But that they see God. They see the bigness, the greatness, the majesty, the power, the wisdom, the creativity, the beauty, all those things that God is. Very important. Very important. It's one thing if we get it from reading a book like the Bible. It's another thing when you see it actually happen. Just like, I could read you a book about my wife. You say, so what? But if I give you a chance to meet her, that's a different story. At least I think so. There's something about when you see the character of an individual, or you see what the person has done or is doing, it's something different than something that you just pick up from a written page. The written page definitely confirms the realities of God's character and God's workings. It does. And so the whole field of the sciences is very interesting. It is unfortunate. I have friends. Yes, they are friends in many ways, who believe that the teaching of science in school is totally unnecessary. I can take you to schools where there isn't one science textbook, there is no scientific information in that classroom. None. It's bare of some other things too. But I find something very interesting, teachers. When we go and have workshops in those communities, and Brother Jonas comes along with them sometimes, like he did last fall, and he does some science experiments, we can't get these people out of his workshop. And big men who are on school boards and so on, they stand there and they're totally intrigued and try to figure out why things work the way they do. And they're more fascinated about some of those things than your children are, your students are, when they do an experiment in school. Some of these things they've never noticed. Some of these things they've never had a chance to observe, never thought about. Some of these things, you start explaining some processes and some principles of physics or chemistry, and they do understand them. They have learned them in life in different ways. I meet some of these people, and they say, algebra? They hardly know how to pronounce the word. That's useless. Multiplying using X's and Y's. That's senseless. Till I explain to them, you do the same thing. Of course, they teach in a different language. I says, you just call it by a different name. And they use a different process of figuring out some of these algebraic problems. You know, they come up with the same solutions. Algebra has more than one way, sometimes, of doing it. And so, you can't avoid science and math. It's just part of life. You may like it, you may not. But it's there. because it shows us so much about God and who He is and what He's done and how He just takes care of things. I believe another thing that Anabaptists should especially be concerned about is the whole teaching of truth and its absoluteness, that God is a God of order. It was only as I was a teacher that I all of a sudden realized, you know, that God actually made math. Somehow people have a bit the idea, yes, God made the universe. But some of the other subjects we study in school, they really have no connection to God. And God made it so that 2 + 3 = 5. I was just recently told, in the province in which I live, in the public school setting, that those teachers are now being taught that they cannot necessarily mark the answer wrong if a student writes that 2 + 3 is another number other than 5. And I said, I declare. So it means I was right after all, some of the time. No, I understand that in certain settings, you know, it may be a different number. Well, if that's the case, I'd like to check some people's bank accounts after a while. See what's going to happen. The proof is going to be when it hits the money fan. It will. And see how far things will fly at that point. But math teaches us that God is absolute in His character. He is truth. That there are things that just don't change because that's just who God is. And that God has beautifully designed things, situations. I have some things here. You may have read these. I do not know. But the awesomeness and the orderliness of God. Somebody gave these to me some time ago. He says, God's accuracy can be observed in the hatching of eggs. For example, potato bug eggs hatch 7 days. Canary, 14. Barnyard hen, 21. Ducks and geese, 28. Mallard, 35. Eggs of a parrot and ostrich, 42. What do all these have in common? Divisible by 7. God's wisdom can be seen in the making of an elephant. The 4 legs of this big beast all bend forward in the same direction. No other quadrupled animal is made like this. God planned that this animal would have a huge body, far too large to live on 2 legs. And for this reason, He gave him 4 fulcrums so he can rise from the ground easily. He'd have a hard time if he did it the way a horse would. God's wisdom is revealed in how He's arranged segments and sections, as well as the number that are in grains. You know what? Each watermelon has an even number of stripes on the rind. Each orange has an even number of segments. Each ear of corn has an even number of rows. Each stalk of wheat has an even number of grains. God has caused flowers to blossom at certain specific times during the day. So that the great botanist, Linnaeus, once said that if he had a conservatory with the right kind of soil, moisture, and temperature, he could tell the time of day or night by the flowers that were open and by those that were closed. And then they said it was a big bang. Or something even more catastrophic that made it happen. God has just made, and we could talk about a long time about these things, about the beauty, the harmony, the simplicity of how God has designed nature, math, for us to use and to enjoy. I believe that there's another characteristic that Anabaptists should definitely consider in teaching math and logic and science, especially the sciences, and that is that we have a responsibility of being a steward. Remember that God told us that we were to subdue the earth, manage it well. It's not ours. It's His. But we have a responsibility that has been entrusted to us to make it work for Him. And along with that responsibility of stewardship, there should come a response of worship. Now, I know in the society in which we live today, when we hear the word worship, that evokes different things. In a lot of modern evangelicalism, you talk of worship. That means a certain segment of a Monday morning, out of a Sunday morning service, which they do certain specific things. I don't know if you've ever been part of something like that or not. I find it rather intriguing that for about 10 minutes they have worship. What do they do the rest of the time? It's on some different decibels, likely. But all of the handiwork of God, teachers, it needs to be taught and it needs to be shown and it needs to be discussed in a way that it's that our students are going to see the awe of God. That God is big. And He's majestic. And He's powerful. And He's strong. And He's wise. And He's beautiful. And He's accurate. And yet He's simple. And He cares about the biggest things of the universe, the solar system. And yet He cares about the smallest thing that hardly shows up on a microscope. One of the experiments that I remember doing as a high school student, I don't remember how well it went anymore, but I know, and I don't know exactly how we did it, but we had to calculate, was it the depth, so to speak, of a molecule. And we used, I think it was oleic acid or some kind of stuff and mixed it with other things. And I don't know the process anymore. I was in 10th grade at the time. But I thought to myself, wow, you can actually figure it out. Something so tiny, you can't see it, and yet it can be calculated. Teachers, the world is big with all kinds of interesting things that God has designed. And I would challenge you as you that you throw these things out to your students every once in a while. Once a day, a few times a week. Now look at what God has done. Look at this. God made this. Listen to this. You can get all kinds of books that talk about these interesting things. I have the blessing of visiting Christian schools a lot with my work. And very often I get, if I come to a school, of course I make arrangements ahead of time, and I'm asked, well, Brother Peter, are you going to have devotions with our students? And yes, I will. I've made it a point of, I have a standard devotional for every year. I usually don't visit a school more than once a year. If I do, there's usually a reason why I need to go there. But anyway, so I have a standard devotional for the year. And it usually involves some animal. And I like to talk about this animal. I still remember the devotional I had about the bee. There's a few of you that probably heard that devotional. Where's Benjamin? Yes, you remember it. How many eyes? I put you on the spot. 1,263. Students will say, how can that be? You start talking about these things. You know, a little bee. And you get these little students just say, wow, that's God. Teachers, the more our students get the wow about God, the more open their heart will be for us to lead them toward Him. That they see the bigness of God, the greatness of God. Not just the scientific facts, not just the data, but that they see the designer behind this. That this is God. So as you show your students how God works in nature, and you show them a telescope, and you start telling them how big Betelgeuse is, and how many suns fit into there, all those kind of things. Or they watch something on a microscope. I found something very interesting. I was at a school where they did not study science. Yet the school teacher had a microscope. Now, he couldn't really use it in the classroom, but he had it there. The teacher told me, he says that one of the preacher's sons, this minister probably was the most set on it being an Orthodox school, that minister's son often stayed after school so that he says, teacher, can I see some things on the microscope? The teacher did not want that to become a conflict with the father. I don't know how they worked it out, but that boy was just intrigued by the detail that God has made. And our students need that. Teacher, school, if your school board is looking at buying a microscope, get nothing but a good one, okay? There's one terrible, frustrating thing about science, and that's poor equipment. Get something that's going to work. Because not only can you do the lesson efficiently and effectively, I believe that if students, after a while, these microscope experiments all just don't turn out, it gives them some sort of a mentality about God's design, even though they know it's a problem with a microscope. But they can't see what God is doing. And we limit their vision. We've given them a poor set of glasses. We need to send them back to the eye doctor. So teachers, look for these local things. I remember, and it's somewhat of a spontaneity. I remember when we lived in Minnesota, and one day I was substitute teaching in the school, small school. One fall day, And all of a sudden, the bishop's wife called us. And she said, if your students want to see monarch butterflies, bring them over. And so we loaded up everybody, several vehicles, and we drove a few miles. And I saw a sight I've never seen before or since. These monarch butterflies were migrating, going south. And they had stopped at our bishop's place there, I guess for a coffee break. And there were several trees that were just totally loaded with black and orange. I mean, they were covered. That was a sight to behold. You just stood and you, and then there were bunches of butterflies flying around you. Somehow you felt as if you had stepped into something that you just had to be quiet because you saw something that was almost holy. It was just absolutely majestic. And we watched this for a while, probably a good hour or so. And we noticed some of them were starting to fly away. We left and went back to school. The sister told us later that after a few hours, they were all gone. Pretty well. But you know, any time in the next couple of days that my students had a few spare moments or that they needed to write some kind of paragraph or report, the M encyclopedia with monarch had a lot of attention. And I don't think my students will forget that lesson. And so look for those opportunities, teachers. Link what you're teaching to practical things that your students would likely be encountering. I know it may take a little bit of effort, but some of these scientific, chemical, physics things, chemistry, physics, biology things that your students study, those are things that their dads likely use in life, whether it's on the farm or in the factory. They are. And it makes it meaningful to your students if you can link what they are learning with something that people they know and appreciate are practically using. Sometimes our students have a bit the idea that we study out of a textbook because it is ideal, and it's not life. And sometimes I think it is because we don't make it life. And we don't give it its vocational route. We don't apply it to things that they encounter and understand. Even like I said before, we've done some of these experiments when we go down Latin America. And these men are intrigued, and yet they know the concept because they work with it in their own way. It's not that those men are not scientific. It's not that they're not. They are men that are very, they're geniuses very often. With mechanics, with the laws of physics. And they understand many of those things, but they have never learned the principles. And so, teachers, make application to what your students are learning with what happens in real life around them. In math, the whole matter of algebra, that these problems get solved, real problems, practical. As I said before, focus on responsibility. You know, we can, and I'm not going to go into a long tirade about this, we could go into this whole mentality of conservation and, you know, green earth stuff. There's an element of truth to it. There's an element that is ungodly. It does not come from a godly source. Teachers, take time to see what God's word says about being a steward, about being resourceful, about being a manager. This earth is for us to use for the glory of God. This earth is not something we worship. In fact, if some of those people, I wonder what the earth would be like if they had a chance to just control it the way they wanted. It'd be in a mess. It wouldn't even be green anymore. God has designed this earth that it be managed. Now we be stewards of it. So focus on responsibility. And then, I want to close, but also give examples of people who have used these sciences in life. I give a few examples, and there could be many more. I take them from history. I understand one of the early Anabaptist leaders was an engineer by the name of Pilgrim Marpeck. I understand that Pilgrim Marpeck was to the Swiss South German Mennonites what Menno Simons was to the Dutch North German Mennonites as a leader. I just picked up this book here, and it says that Pilgrim Marpeck, I won't read this, but he said that he was from Rattenburg in the Inn Valley, and he lived at Strasbourg, close to the Black Forest, where a lot of logging was done, and these logs were then being sent down the river. But they couldn't send them down in the summer and the fall because of lack of water in the river. And his task was to bring these timber from the mountains by water. And so he had to rig up a system of dams and water gates to make it efficient. In fact, he was tolerated longer as an Anabaptist in these cities because of his engineering feats. Finally, he was expelled as well. And so our people haven't all been just dumb, common people. In fact, few of them have been that. Our Dutch Mennonite people moved from Holland, were invited over to Prussia, now Poland, to the Vistula Delta. And they were welcomed there, even though they were Anabaptists, but they were welcomed there because of their understanding of drainage. And the Vistula Delta, even today, is a rich farmland where it used to be a swamp. Our people have been welcomed into other areas, the Ukraine, America, Latin America, because of our skills involving scientific methods in farming, in an industry. They may not always have known all the principles and studied all the textbooks, but they knew what worked. And so, teachers, Our people have been involved in science, although many of them maybe have not gone into scientific research or gone to the moon. Our people have been and are involved in medicine, a field of great service. And so it's important that we make these skills, these concepts, interesting to them, intriguing to them. Not only for usefulness, but I believe probably more than any other subject, science and math should cause our students to look up to a God and worship. God bless you.